is the Human Rights 2020s podcast from the Human Rights Consortium Scotland. This episode is the third in a series of four recordings taken from an event called What Went Wrong? COVID-19, Accountability and Building Back Better, held on the 17th of May 2021. This is a recording of a presentation made by Talat Yaqub, independent consultant and campaigner.
And hi everybody. A lot of what I will be talking about follows on from what Naomi mentioned there about decision-making and accountability and changing the system, which we, the status quo in the system we had pre-COVID. As Barry said, I'm an independent consultant and researcher. I was working on co-authoring a piece of work that focused on social action within local communities and how communities responded during COVID-19. The purpose was to understand how communities come together and what this means for the future. It was funded by a group of third sector organisations and funders, as you can see on the right here, including Community Fund, SCBO, the Robertson Trust and the Cora Foundation. The report included 18 community researchers, and what I mean by community researchers is not people like me. So people who do research for a living, but people who are actually in their own communities, supported through capacity building and skills development to research their own communities. The reason that was done was because we felt that it would be a more honest and trusted source of information, and that local communities know their local members of communities know their own communities better than what I can, being parachuted in and asking questions. It's a method that I've used before, and I hope more across the third sector and public sector use as a way to create authenticity in the research that we produce. There were over 350 participants, 22 creative stories told about their experiences during COVID-19, and two focus groups as well. One of the key points that came out of this, and I think it's critical for any of the work we do going forward, is that at the beginning of COVID-19, which does feel like a long time ago, there was a real rose-tinted glasses view of what community resilience looked like and how communities came together. There was a lot of applauding of communities, and whilst that is wonderful, it's really important to understand most members of communities were having to intervene because of long-standing poverty and inequality in their communities. They were responding where state has not successfully responded to date. So to only see it through rose-tinted glasses is not just uncomfortable, but false. And I have quite a concern about what that means about what we call community resilience and what we expect from communities in our COVID recovery conversation, particularly our economic recovery, because there's an assumption that communities just got together and delivered. They had to as a result of failings by state. So some of the findings from the report. 60% of participants got involved in social action efforts. Social action is essentially volunteering in your local community, taking action to support those around you. They got involved because they felt compelled to take part and help in their communities and play their part. Almost one in three got involved in social action efforts, hearing about it from a neighbour, showing the organic nature of most of what this was. The most common social action efforts were food distribution and collection. And I emphasise, we've called it food distribution and collection because there was lots of different ways in which that was happening. But essentially what we're talking about there is food banks and emergency food parcels. Groceries or prescription collections for neighbours, befriending or checking in with isolating or shielding neighbours. A third of participants were new to volunteering in their community, so they're doing it for the first time. 44% of participants were also getting social action support themselves. So whilst they were helping others, they were also in receipt of support such as from the food bank. 51% of participants felt there was an increase in community frustration at ongoing inequality. So there was an increase in the level of awareness about the deeply entrenched inequality in their society, in their local communities. And a positive, I rarely say this, a positive statistic, 64% felt there was a reduction in stigma in coming forward for support. So asking for help, whether that was mental health support, advice and support services, or indeed food banks. Respondents explained that they felt empowered by supporting their local communities, but equally disempowered by the impact of inequality, feeling that their communities were being overlooked. Many talked about feeling overwhelmed by the level of inequality they were seeing, not just pre-COVID, but exacerbated by COVID, and not knowing how to respond adequately or feeling like what they were doing was not enough. Participants wanted to see significantly more local decision-making and co-production, which included their communities and a diverse cross-section of Scotland. What we found was often those experiencing the most inequality were doing the most to support others too. So disabled people, women, unpaid carers, people of colour. But this has been largely ignored in any of the conversations, the discussions, the positive outlook that we've had about community resilience. We've not talked about the disproportionate level of responsibility and action expected of those who already experience inequality. And often those who are doing the work to tackle inequality are the ones that are feeling it most themselves. And they're doing this as additional free labour and emotional labour. One of the key things that came out of this was the issue of mental health concerns and consequences not being properly responded to. So a number of individuals, about a third of individuals who were engaging in this work, talked about the mental health consequences that they felt were happening in their society, but they felt themselves that their mental health had taken a dip by supporting other people and seeing the level of an extent of difficulties that existed within the local communities. A quote here is, "I was doing some check-in calls, just asking people if they need food parcels or a prescription picked up, and people would end up telling me their health problems, their worries. I was immediately out of my depth. I can't advise. I'm not trained on this." A number of individuals talked about showing up, particularly with older and isolating neighbours, showing up at doors to ask how they are, and hearing people feeling unwell, feeling anxious, depressed, or in some cases suicidal, and not knowing where to go for support, not knowing how to intervene or support at that time. And often they're not actually being local services that they could signpost to that weren't already significantly under pressure or had significant waiting lists. And finally, a quote here, which really summarizes the entire report. "The work we did felt like both a blessing and a curse. We were happy to help, but sad we had to." Repeatedly, people talked about the need for better local community level decision making. This quote is from one of our community researchers. "We know the issues. It's good that it's being recognised by those higher up, but keep us in mind. Don't forget communities. Please let this report have some solutions. I worry that communities are going to be the folk that miss out going forward, but we could be a good part of the solution. We should be working at every level to end the unfairness that has been felt for so long in all our communities." Repeatedly, there was talk about feeling like something was happening to them. Decisions were happening to them rather than with them. So they felt pretty disempowered, and this was exacerbated again by COVID-19. Where we've talked about community empowerment, whether that's through the Community Empowerment Bill, that has not been delivered, that has not been seen on the ground. People feel like decisions are taken, and they feel the consequences of not fit for purpose decisions. They do not get a chance to hold people to account fully, and they do not get a chance to be part of the decisions so that the decisions made actually work for them in the first place. So we had a number of recommendations that went over 2 pages, and I will not bore you with those, but I will put the link to the report into the chat afterwards. But a few of the key recommendations. Across Scotland, at community level, there should be investment in a programme of citizen capacity building, which supports democratic and social partnership. The reason we as a group who were doing the research and the community researchers felt that this should happen is that Scotland is increasing its use of community participation methods. So whether that's the social security panel that was used, the lived experience panels that are being used, citizens assemblies that are being used. The issue, of course, is that we're reliant on there being capacity, resource, time within communities, and that people understand the political process and the policy-making process enough to take part. But to date, when communities have been actively disengaged and pushed out of those conversations, they're not going to know what's happening in a very convoluted policy space. So for participation to make sense, for it to be worthwhile in any way, there needs to be an investment in a program of citizen skills development around democratic and social participation. This will also enhance Scotland's ability to hold decision makers to account. Bolder action is needed to tackle root causes of poverty and inequality. Consideration must be given to the implementation of universal basic income and the practical ways in which a wellbeing economy can be created to deliver for those furthest away from opportunity and financial security. The group had, the community researchers had said they had heard about people talking about a wellbeing community. They had no idea what that actually meant for their communities. Rhetoric is good, but delivery is poor. Those providing support, either as volunteers or working in the third sector or public sector organisations, must have access to appropriate wellbeing support and access to funded mental health related training. There is already, and there will be coming, even more burnout within the third and public sector and community groups and organisations, which has not been discussed or invested in. Significant increase in investment is required in mental health services, which focus on local accessible delivery and are responsive to the needs of minoritised groups. And finally, invest further resources on ensuring equal access to digital skills and the internet. This should include consistent access to broadband in rural communities, distribution of technology and data access to low-income families. And consideration should be given to a universal broadband policy in Scotland. Largely, the activity, any activity to be able to keep people together and create some sense of community was done online, which means that digital inequality and lack of accessibility was even further entrenched during COVID-19, as I'm sure you're all aware. So I'm going to stop there because I know we didn't have a lot of time, but essentially the overview of the report is a lot of what you already know, but it's the only report that I've seen that focuses particularly on communities speaking for themselves during COVID-19 and giving a voice to a lot of those who have been excluded, ignored or forgotten about during this last year and 2 months that we've had. The emphasis is on people's well-being, and those who are experiencing inequality doing the work of tackling inequality in their communities, and that communities at the very, very local level and the most excluded level and ignored level being those who are participating in decision-making in a real and tangible way rather than a tokenistic way, or discussing with them decisions that have already been foregone conclusions or already been decided.
Thank you for listening to the Human Rights 2020s podcast. For more information about our work as Scotland's civil society network for the protection and promotion of human rights, please visit our website at www.hrcscotland.org or follow us on Twitter at @hrcscotland. Thank you.